Chapter 21. He didn't respond well to threats. Never had. His first instinct on being released was to go straight to the Bastion Armory, grab what he needed, head up to the warehouse, and start the fires burning. Then he'd do the same to Jash. And then, if he was still alive, to Tereshova. He found himself sweating and jittery, mostly from anger. He could use that. The adrenaline would keep him going just long enough. He hadn't forgotten everything Berger had taught him and could still use a weapon. But nothing had changed, not really. He wouldn't get far before they gunned him down. Vermida was right. Lucille had the Bastion in his pocket, and so it wouldn't just be cartel operatives aiming at him, but sanctioners too. And if they knew his name, then they knew where he lived. It would all be over bloodily very soon. Breck's advice was still sound. He had to walk away. It made him furious. Once back in the Luxor, he'd slammed his fists into the control column. Then he'd rested his forehead against the console, as if he could bury himself inside it. As the rain drummed on the cab roof, he felt like he could stay there forever, gradually dissolving, eroding and dissipating, until he was nothing but another stain on the sodden asphalt. What made him move again in the end was the thing he'd meant to be doing all along, looking for Alessinaxa. Throughout it all, he tried to remain calm. Whenever he'd reassured Malija, he'd been telling her what he really thought, that she'd be home soon, that this was just her punishing them for the guard thing. But now it was getting worrying. Speaking to Vermida had shaken him up, reminded him just what kind of people plied their trade in the city. So he pulled himself together, restarted the engines, drove back the way he'd come, then headed out towards Mergev. He visited the supervisor there and gave him the same instructions he'd given the first one. He checked records on the sanctioners' comm traffic to see if anything had come in. There was nothing there. After that, he checked to see if anything had come back from the trawls he'd done of her known acquaintances. The list of these was short, and it made him wince to think how little he knew about her life outside the confines of the HAB unit. She'd wanted it that way, of course, but it made him feel powerless, just when he needed to be the opposite. One contact flashed up, though. A woman called Gertuda, whose details he pulled from an old record scribbled back at the HAB. He voxed her, and she was willing to meet him, so he headed up to the place she worked, a nondescript textile operation stuck down in the Vostoka Grade Sixes. Somehow she managed to slip out of her shift, and so he took her to a quiet refec house and bought her a hot drink and something to eat. She was a slip of a girl, skinny and with sallow skin, so looked like she could use both. She didn't know anything about Naxi going missing or where she might be. She hadn't even realised she was back from the feeder academy. "I envied her, to be honest," Gertuda told him, smiling self-consciously. "She got out. We all cheered her on for that." She sniffed and rubbed at her arm absently. "There's nothing left back here if you don't manage to get out." Zidorov frowned. "Not that bad, surely," he said. "You have a function. You have a stipend. You have a life ahead of you." Gertuda laughed. "Yeah, what a life." She shook her head. "I have a life on an assembly line. I have a life stitching together regulation fatigues for the defence forces. That's all I'll ever know. One day, I suppose, I'll enter a legal coupling and they'll make me produce for the Imperium more workers, more hands to make more guns. And then I'll die, having never travelled beyond Yurgayina. Naxi got out. Thrown. We loved her for that." And then Zidorov remembered what Naxi had said and the way her eyes had lit up, talking of starships, duty and conquest. Perhaps he too would have felt like that once. When had he stopped? "I've got to find her," he said quietly. "You've no idea where she might have gone." "No, no idea, but..." She stopped and suddenly looked unwilling to say anything more. "If you know something, you have to tell me." Gertuda's eyes flicked up to his, and he saw the echo of fear in them. "I don't know about Naxi. Really, she's probably fine, but you should be asking more questions, I think, about what's going on here. Everyone I know is scared, because she's not the only one who's gone missing. We all know someone who has." Zidorov felt a little colder. "Go on." "It starts with Topaz. It's easier to get than ever. We all do it. You'd do it if you had to work a stitching mill for 14 hours a day. But that's when they get you.
if you can't handle it. There are these men, sometimes women, they're at parties, the ones running them. You never know who they are, but they seem to know who you are. And if you're stupid or just young, you take their invites because they can get you topaz, and then they promise you there's more upclave, and you go with them, and you never come back.
She started to clutch herself, hold her arms in her hands. The hot drink didn't seem to be warming her that much.
See, we don't count for much, really, she said. What do we got? Nothing, save that we're young. And the old, the ones who should be looking out for us, they can take even that from us. We know where they go, the ones who go missing. We know what happens to them.
Then you should report it, Sidorov said, when it happens.
Gatuda laughed again, more harshly this time.
Really? Report it to who? The sanctioners? You?
She sighed.
That's why there's topaz everywhere, because for a while you can stop being afraid. It makes you vulnerable, but you still take it, and it's worth it, to not be afraid of them even for an hour or two.
He wanted to tell her she was wrong then. He wanted to tell her that she shouldn't have to live like that, and that the enforcers were there to prevent it. But none of that was true. He'd even been in the place where they ended up, and he knew with perfect clarity that no one in a position of authority would ever do the damnedest thing about it. That made him angry again, more angry than he'd been since this whole thing had started. No doubt Adiaert had been one of those wolves using his charm, slate and looks to bring new recruits for a machine that could never be sated. If he was dead, which looked almost certain, then it was something like justice. The problem was that many more had stood up and taken his place, and it was only going to get worse.
Getting out solves none of that, he said, not really sure if he believed what he was saying. They'll come after you, one way or another. I could tell you to do what the Propvids say. Rejoice in your work, learn to honour the Imperium through labour, find joy in your sacrifice for him, and reject temptation.
Then Gatuda laughed for a third time, this time with genuine amusement.
Does anyone believe that shit? She asked. I mean, apart from the priests, have you met anyone, anywhere, who believe that shit?
He smiled grimly.
I don't know. Someone must do, I guess. The churches are all full.
Yeah, the churches are all full.
He reached out awkwardly and placed a hand on her elbow. He'd wanted it to be a reassuring gesture, perhaps a little bit paternal, though as soon as he did it, he wondered if it would come across as creepy.
Thank you for telling me what you know, he said. I mean it, and, well, don't assume that no one cares about this. It might look that way, but it might not be true.
She didn't pull away from his touch. She looked so hollow, so worn out, that she might not have had the strength even if she'd wanted to.
So you say, she said cynically, I guess I'll have to take your word for it.
That settled it. Something about Vermida's smug assurance, his calm belief that this was all wrapped up now and nothing further would be done, snapped the thread of restraint. It was one thing to take advice from Brecht, who, despite his habit, was a wise old canid. It was another to be bullied into silence by a man who had no qualms about pulling the marrow from living bones. And now he'd seen the fear for himself, what it was doing. He'd have to go quietly, go carefully, but this was not over yet. Once back in a part of the sector he recognised, he summoned Drage's veil link to his iris and prepared to make the connection. Drage would come with him, back to the warehouse, if he asked him. They could burn that, at least. They might be killed right afterwards. They might bring all the hells down on Von Geller's head, but they could burn it. He almost did it. The thing that prevented him was an incoming call from the Bastion's main veil operator. Probator Zidorov, you have a meeting request. Zidorov cancelled the call to Drage.
Who from?
Mordak Tereshova. He's requested immediate response. Lokref to follow. Can you comply?
Mordak.
Zidorov nearly refused. What was there to tell the man now? That it had all been a sordid mistake, and that he ought to sort out his own grubby family troubles without involving the law? Did this count as dropping his inquiries, as he'd indicated to Vermida? Maybe, maybe not. Still, even if this was all done bar the shooting, there were still things he'd like to know, and Mordak might be able to tell him them. Complying, he replied, swinging the looks around as the coordinates came in. Did he say what it was about? Negative. I'll tell him you're on your way. The Lokref wasn't to the building he'd met him in before. Zidorov soon realized the reference was a long way out, halfway toward the coast, where the land dropped sharply and extended out in grey, drear emptiness for miles in every direction. After a while, the built-up cityscape gave out entirely, exposing tracts of flat rockcrete studded with brush. A few habitations dotted the horizon here and there, their windows all facing away from the city behind them. The rain was steady and miserable, turning everything a saturated black. He began to detect something briny in the air. The road became pitted and poorly maintained. It took an hour or so more driving before his location appeared in the viewscreen ahead. An outcrop of dark basalt rising from the flatlands around, crowned with a homestead of some sort. It was an elaborate place, all towers and gates built from the same black stone as its foundations. It looked old, but probably wasn't. It had the air of a place designed to hark back to a past that few people on Alecto really remembered. Zidorov drove up a long and winding path, circling around the outcrop's lower skirts, before reaching a driveway where three ground cars were already parked. The gale had picked up, and flurries of rain skipped across an open balcony. The house rose up above him in steep terraces. It was big. There must have been more than 20 dorm chambers inside, and Zidorov could see a turbine copter pad mounted near the summit. He got out and was stung by the bite of the wind. He hurried into cover, and soon found himself in front of two large brass-fronted doors, each with the Tereshova Leonine crest embossed in the centre. Before he could locate a summon chime, the doors were opened by the same uniformed man he'd seen in Yorgeyina, the one with the metal hand. "He's expecting you," the man said and showed him in. Zidorov went inside, running his hand quickly through his wet hair. The interior of the place was Spartan, with hardwood floors and bare white walls. A few bronze sculptures stood on pedestals here and there, but otherwise it was all austere, ruthlessly clean. Metal Hand led him across a large entrance lobby and down a gloomy corridor. They emerged through another set of large doors into a wide room built into the opposite side of the outcrop, looking north. This chamber had wide, tall windows, exposing a vista of storm-blown clouds. In the far distance, Zidorov could see the sea, a thin line of white surf under a grey and brooding sky. In all other directions, the empty land yawned off, damp and miserable. The room itself was furnished like the one before, spotless, almost empty. A pair of black real leather couches faced the windows. Mordak Tereshova sat in one of them, his back to Zidorov, looking out at the view. Nettlehand took his leave then, closing the doors soundlessly behind him. Zidorov walked up to the other couch and sat down. For a while, that was that. Mordak said nothing. Zidorov said nothing. The two of them just looked at the unfolding storm. "You have not asked why I wish to see you," Mordak said eventually. Zidorov looked up at him. The man appeared older than he had done before, as if years had been added in days. His beard had looked lustrous before, now it looked scraggly. His skin was, if anything, paler, almost as pale as Vermida's. "I can take a guess," Zidorov said. "Guess away. She's told you. She's probably already started separation proceedings. She's taken half your assets with her to Lucille and is now so heavily protected that you'll never get them back. And that thing you had going on with the Vidora, that thing you hoped would take you into the off-world trade routes, that's all gone, and she's got it." Mordak smiled sourly, still staring ahead. He had dark rings under his eyes. "You know," he said, "when we first met, I didn't think much of you. I thought you were a regulation plodder, trying to make something out of nothing. Not a bad description, to be fair. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe I should have been more careful." He finally turned to face Zidorov. "A judge of character. That's what I always thought I was. You need to be to succeed. You need to know who to trust and who to destroy. That's the essential decision. There's no middle ground. I thought I could trust her. But you never loved her."
"I only ever loved one person. Dead now, I assume."
"In all probability. I've not been able to determine that yet."
"But beyond help."
Zidorov nodded. "I fear so." Mordak smiled sadly. He was a big man, one who was still physically strong. It was strange to see him defeated.
"Can you tell me anything more?" Zidorov asked. "About any of this?"
Mordak sighed.
It was always a marriage of convenience, as you no doubt detected. I thought the brand was strong enough to hold things together. She was on the road to ruin when I met her. You knew that. Crippled with debts, ready to lose it all. I never revealed it. That was our deal. In return, she never revealed the truth about Adiaid, that he wasn't hers. Amid all the rest of the treachery, those two things were sacred. It hardly matters now. But you moved first, didn't you? Asked Sidorov. You and Adiaid. You were going to work with the cartels on this thing. Their muscle, your cargo contracts. Was that the deal?
Yes, roughly. I didn't like it. We make most of our slate through legal, or mostly legal, means.
Adiaid was the keenest. Mordak looked down at his hands. It gave him something to do. He could supply the subjects.
And you never had qualms?
It was business. Just business. You know what the procedure involves?
A little.
Sidorov didn't find himself in the mood to go easy.
They bleed to death. That's the principle. Over days, in agony. You were going to profit from that.
There's a product. There's a market. The coldness, the detachment. It was almost superhuman.
Sidorov shook his head. He glanced up at the storm outside. It looked to be getting worse. The thick glass panes were already being lashed with thick streaks of rain.
Anyway, she played us both, Sidorov said. Lassiel and her. It's still going on. I'd like to stop it.
Good luck with that.
You could help me. Mordak laughed.
With what, Probator? I've got a fight to hold on to what I still have. Avro always fought me. Now he's going to keep on coming. Keep on coming. Will I weather it? Who knows? She will tell him what I planned, what the finances are, where the bodies are buried. It's all unravelled rather fast.
I tried to speak to her.
And she didn't answer. Mordak smiled sadly.
You're no more use to her now you've played your part. And if you did get to her, like you got to me, you wouldn't get away again.
Walk away, Probator.
Walk away. Yes, that's the advice I've been getting.
I don't think you'll take it.
Sidorov shifted in his seat. It was uncomfortable. What was it with these hyper-expensive chairs that made them so damned hard to sit in?
You know, when you have a feeling, an itch, something you can't shake. I guess that's how people like you operate sometimes. Hunches, urges. I've got one now. But I don't know what it means. I don't even know what to ask.
Mordak raised an eyebrow. Then I don't think I can be much use to you, can I?
Why did you want to see me?
Mordak shrugged.
It felt polite to close the loop.
Maybe. Or maybe you had one more thing to give.
I think I'm past giving. Closure, then. Something you have to unload.
Mordak looked at him, half smiling, half frowning. His powers had faded like a flower caught in a tox haze, but there was still something there, a residual viciousness.
The thing about Udmil is, well, she's not exactly maternal. No one asks about her life before the Combine, and that's fine. We wanted it that way. She never wanted children after we formed our partnership. She didn't even want to keep a family name and took mine in a shot. Strange, you might think. A proud woman with slate of her own. You think little of me, Probator, of my morals, of my choices. But it's one thing to be casual with the lives of strangers. It's another to be casual with your own bloodline. She thinks she's one, I guess. Or part of her does. But she carries it with her. Something that can't be outrun, no matter how much slate she accumulates or how many rich old fools she takes to a bedchamber. It'll be waiting for her when all is done.
The half-smile disappeared, and his expression became as cold as the wind over the empty land.
I relish that now. There'll be a reckoning for all of us at the end. I am content to stand before the throne, to plead my case before the eternal judge. She never will be. She knows what he will tell her.
Sidorov held his gaze the whole time.
You want to be more specific?
Not really.
I never knew just what haunts her, but I do know it consumes her and always will.
It eats her happiness, sucks it out of the world. She never loved, not like I did. I don't think she was capable of it. So then, knowing that, knowing what she's done to achieve this, which of us is the victor in the end?
Sidorov thought about that. Eventually he shook his head and got up. He looked out at the rain and then at the surroundings. The sparseness of it, the bone-cold emptiness, reflected the character of its owner.
Neither of you, Sidorov said. That's what I reckon. I think you'll both burn one day soon, or not too soon, or not so soon. You deserve to for what you've done. If I had the torch, I'd light the fire myself.
But that's the difference between you and me, Probator, said Mordack, not getting up. I could light a fire once. You never could, and never will.
Sidorov started to walk. He didn't look back.
Don't count on that, he said flatly. I'll keep plodding. Maybe something will turn up.
On the way back to the bastion, he felt like kicking himself. He'd never questioned it. He'd never thought to query why a woman like Udmil Tereshova would have taken Mordak's family name so quickly. By convention, a legal marriage in Yorgeyina carried no obligation on either party to adopt the bloodline name of the other. It was common for the most influential or wealthy family signifier to end up being preserved. Such things were often cause for haggling and slate transactions when there was anything serious at stake. Everyone he knew had stories of furious multi-generational rows, with entire habclaves changing hands and shots being fired just to keep a particular name in circulation. On some occasions, no accommodation was reached, and so an entirely new name might be dreamed up, or something hyphenated and elaborate concocted to satisfy every bruised ego. He'd known from the start that Udmil had once been a member of the Ramanev family, a bloodline with just as much prestige as the Tereshovas. Even if she'd been down on her luck at the time of matrimony, it felt strange, now that Mordack had mentioned it in passing, that she'd not put up a fight to keep the old name. She fought to keep everything owed her, that woman. He reached the bastion again and headed swiftly up to the winding stairs towards the archives level. His private terminal was capable of accessing most of what the databanks held, but not all, and not as efficiently as the dedicated analyzers' machines. So he made his way down a long corridor, darkening as the day faded, until he reached a pair of locked iron doors. They were guarded by two gun servitors, one of whom looked up blankly at him as he approached. He gave the servitor the hard form of his hollow seal, and it inserted the wafer into a slot carved into its chest. A few seconds later, the lock on the door clicked open and the wafer slid out again. Sidorov took it, ignoring as ever the servitor's milky eyes and waxy skin. Inside, it was like entering a cathedral nave. The ceiling was high and arched. Ranks of parchment bundles ran off into the dark, barely lit by the spore-like suspensor lumens. The walls were as thick as any in the bastion and had no windows. They said that a block-leveler bomb could go off inside the bastion compound, and everything would still be intact in here. The entire fortress could be turned to rubble, and still the records would be safe, mouldering away slowly in the dark. Sidorov walked past the physical records, ignoring the cowled analyzers sitting at their desks, surrounded by stacks of vellum, and made for one of the retrieval cogitators. They were cumbersome things, encased in faded plastic housings, their backs sprouting 100 cables that ran and snaked into channels in the floor, but still quicker than having to haul things by hand. He took a seat in the clamshell operator's chair, depressed a blood prick ident, pulled the activation lever, and waited for the machine spirit to emerge from the cold depths of the unit. When the phosphor ruins finally glowed into being on the lens, he began. All records, Udmil Tereshova. Just as before, that produced rather little. Some corporate background, estimates of net worth at various stages over the past decades, stated records of contribution to the Bastion's equipment funds. The biographical data disclosed a single son, Adierd, and a single husband, Mordack. He dug a little deeper, bringing up some of the more obscure files he'd not bothered with the last time. None of them told him anything he didn't already know. All records, Udmil Ramanev. Again, he'd run this search before. The information here was even sparser, dating from a time before the true success of the merged company. A few references in various litigation suits, some announcements of corporate mergers and acquisitions, statements of investment,
No additional biographical data. Knowing what he knew now, it was striking that the frequency of records dropped off just prior to the announcement of the marriage to Mordack. Still, it wasn't wildly out of kilter with what he'd have expected. All criminal records, Udmil Ramanev. None found. None found under the Tereshova name either. That didn't mean she'd been innocent of everything her whole career, of course, just that she'd been able to pay enough when something was uncovered. All criminal records, Ramanev. That produced tremendous quantities of material, detailing everything from petty street crime to major larceny. Sighing, Zidorov worked his way through it all. Despite the family name being specified, none of it related to Udmil. The Ramanevs in those records were unrelated or were distant ancestors, long dead. Still, they were all checked just to see if anything came up. Not one of them gave him anything useful. The hours passed. He left the terminal to retrieve some caffeine, setting it to one side before processing another batch. The names and numbers began to blur in front of his eyes, swimming like motes. He blinked hard and carried on. All records, Ramanev, chronomark, start 00002350, end 00002360-1. And that produced another swathe, this time everything stored on the machines between the two specified dates. Inquiries, victim statements, legal deposits, staff accounts, anything conceivable that the scholiasts working away in the depths of the archive dungeons had ever found fit to record. He put his head in his hands and slumped forward. Just reading the header information alone was numbing. He scrolled through the first few pages, then he applied a filter. Refine, victim records. That still left hundreds, but at least he could make a start. He began to scan, starting with reasonably recent reports, then going backwards in time. Most of these were fatalities. The Bastion rarely recorded victim details of those whose bodies weren't actually sitting in the morgue at the time of compilation. It took a long time to find her even then. He almost missed it, amid all the lists and the statistics. Something, a sudden flicker, made him go back, look again, make doubly sure. Ayan Ramanev, deceased, age 23, standard Terran. He didn't know the name, but the chronomark was significant. She was listed as female, registered in the same sub-district that Udmil had been at the time, 6 months prior to Udmil and Mordak's sudden marriage. There were no other records of the woman's existence at all, nothing to cross-reference with, not even a standard citizen biodata readout, which almost everyone in Varangantua had for imperial tithe purposes. He found himself staring at the phosphor runes. Ayan was an unusual name. He isolated the victim record and expanded the section detailing what they'd found when the body came in. Cause of death, multiple. Dehydration, malnourishment, liver failure, blood loss, bone marrow trauma, repeat cardiac episodes. He'd seen similar reports many times. The first occasion had been after the initial raid with Berger, the one where he'd had to drink himself into a stupor afterwards just to keep going. He took a look at the diagrammatic pics and saw the puncture wounds in her arms, her legs, her torso. He saw the bruising around her mouth, where the tubes had been wedged. He sat back. He read it again. He checked the dates. He remembered what she had said to him back in her mansion that very first time. You know the fear. You know what it is when for a moment you cannot protect them. You know the certainty you feel when something is wrong. Yes. He knew that fear. He took a backup of the record and sent it to his terminal. He wiped the record of his searchers, erased the session statistics, and closed the cogitator down. Then he got up, reached for his caffeine, and left the archive chamber. As he went, he made a call over the secure vox. Draj, tell me where you are. We have to end this.